Chasing the White Lion. That's coming up next, right here on The Right Stuff.
You are listening to the best, the only place to be on Tuesday night. That's right, you're listening to The Right Stuff, and you're at the right place at the right time. From England to Canada, from Detroit to the Coconuts, we are showcasing Christian authors worldwide, giving you tips, tools, techniques, and resources for you, the writer, to hone and perfect your craft. Tune in every Tuesday at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, right here on WPJC 104.5. And your host, Parker J. Cole.
Hi, and welcome to another edition of The Right Stuff. I'm the queen of Tuesday night, Parker J. Thank you so much for being with me. I am so excited because I have so much to tell you, not the least of which is talking to James R. Hannibal, author of Chasing the White Lion, hot off the press as of last month. So if you're sitting there in quarantine and you need something to read, pick up Chasing the White Lion today. It's available at Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. So make sure you go ahead, get your copy today. You are going to enjoy this book. It's a spy thriller that just keeps you on the edge of your seat. You don't know what's going to happen from chapter to chapter. It's all over the world, very diverse characters. So much is going on in Chasing the White Lion. Make sure you pick up Chasing the White Lion today. Before I get into our interview with James, I do have to tell you a few things. Now, next week is my birthday, guys. I am so excited, but it kind of hits me in the face that I'm actually this old. And I was telling someone, it may have been my mom, I said, when did that happen? When did I get this old? My mom says, every day. You've gotten older every day. And she doesn't help out a lot, actually, my mom. But, you know, I love her to death. But at the same time, I was thinking, you know, I'm getting older, but I'm so thankful for that because someone else didn't live that long like I have. Someone else is mourning their loved ones right now. Someone else is worried that their loved ones may succumb to COVID or some other type of ailment. So I'm thankful to the Lord, first of all, that he allows me to see next week. I'll be older along with my twin sister. You guys know what happened to my twin sister last year. So I'm so thankful that I get to see another year. And with that, I'll have my newest book releasing on my birthday. It's my first multi-book series I'm doing by myself called Heart to South Dakota. So if you love historical sweet romance, you'd be able to order that today. It's on pre-order, and then you can get it on your Kindle. Next week, the 21st, The Day in Infamy. Now, over the past several years, I've done this show, but I've never actually asked for help. So I recently, through the help of a wonderful man of God who also has a podcast, I just started a Patreon. So if you want to support the show, you could become a quill patron, a pen patron, a pencil patron, or a marker patron. All the tiers are available if you go to patreon.com/writestuff. You know, I'm excited to see where the show is going. We just got on iHeartRadio. We're also on Spotify and a few other distribution channels, and only the Lord can do that. So if you want to join in and help out with Right Stuff, you can definitely go to my Patreon account, again, at patreon.com. And I just started today. Guess what? We already have two patrons. So this show is sponsored by Jackie and Jess Hannah. And we want to thank them first and foremost for their support. And they are our first Patreons for Right Stuff Radio. Thank you guys so much. This show is sponsored by you. If you want to weigh in on our topic, you know you can by calling in at 646-668-8485 and then press that 1 to be live on air. Or hit me on Twitter at Parker J. Cole, hashtag Right Stuff, with your questions or comments. We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. We'll be right back after these messages. Stay tuned.
Don't go anywhere. More with Parker and her guest on the Right Stuff Radio Show. We'll be right back.
If you are an author looking to gain visibility for your books, then authorshout.com is the place to go. We have a wide variety of affordable products and services to include a member zone that will help you get the word out about your books. Our team here at AuthorShout.com specializes in creating stunning, digital products to include book banners, teaser videos, book trailers, book covers, and a whole lot more. So what are you waiting for? Stop by authorshout.com today and let our team connect you with a world of new readers.
Are you an indie author looking to create audiobooks listeners will love? At The Audio Flow, we handle the entire process, from casting the perfect voice to distribution. Contact us today at 317-927-8770. The Audio Flow, a new way to do audio.
We're back, and you're hanging out with the queen of Tuesday night, Parker J, and her guests, right here on The Right Stuff.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Right Stuff here on WPJC 104.5. Again, so very, very glad you are here with me today. We are talking to author James R. Hannibal. He is the author of the book Chasing the White Lion, hot and fresh off the press from last month. So guess what? You got to get this book today. I've been reading this book. It is such an exciting read. If you like spy thrillers and espionage and all those kind of things that make you go whoo, whoo, and jump up and down, this is the book for you. Go ahead, pick up Chasing the White Lion today on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. You know, whenever I read one of these types of stories, I just feel so inadequate because I am not a fighter. I am a writer, okay? I've only held a weapon, quote unquote, twice in my life, once when I was 18 and once X number of years later, okay? And so I'm sitting there reading this book and there's all kind of espionage and gun talk and, you know, special code language. I'm like, I wish I was this cool. I really do wish I was this cool. But James makes this book so easy to read, even for someone who doesn't know what a gun is or what does it mean when you say Glock. You know, if I say Glock, I think, is that like guacamole or something like that? But no, James is so much better at that than I am. And so I'm so excited to introduce him to you. And so without further ado, I want to introduce James Hannibal. James, how are you doing today?
I am doing very well. Thank you very much. And I'm excited to be on the show.
Thank you so much. And I want to send a shout out to Peter Younghusband for connecting us. Those of you who know Peter Younghusband, you know, he's on my board of reviewers. And he's such a just wonderful guy who just really likes to connect authors and readers together, particularly if you like speculative fiction. So make sure as you get to know James that you thank Peter for me by going to his website, Perspective by Peter. And he has tons of reviews from speculative fiction authors all over the place. So Peter, thank you for connecting us. And James, I'm so excited to tell people about who you are and give them this book because it has rave reviews on Amazon and wherever other books are at. It has rave reviews of people. We want to get behind the story. And I was telling James before the broadcast, guys, I'm telling you, I just love his name, James R. Hannibal. I mean, that is honestly the coolest name on planet Earth. You cannot get any cooler than that. I was telling him it's like Jack Reacher, Jack Ryan, you know, James Hannibal. I mean, I just expect to see you like, you know, what's the word? We grappling from a building with some kind of gun in your hand and shooting people. That's like, that's the only image I see when I think of James R. Hannibal. But I may be close to the truth. I may not be close to the truth. So let's just dig into our interview right now. So I can always read your bio, but that really doesn't tell me who you are. So go ahead and tell me who you are to our listeners too, in your own words.
Okay, well, I'm a former stealth pilot, graduate of the U.S. Air Force Academy, got my degree in Middle Eastern Studies and Counterterrorism before going on to be a fighter pilot, flying in the Middle East, and doing some intelligence work as well. And then due to some of my expertise, I was pulled into the stealth bomber community, where my clearances went up, and so did my extracurricular activities. So I had really cool names like survivability officer, intelligence liaison, and tactical deception officer, before finally getting out in 2000. 2007, and now I'm out of the Air Force. I did fly for the National Guard and Reserves for a while, doing other ops, working with drones and stuff. But now I'm completely out and flying for the airlines and writing books. And finally, I did write in the ABA side of the house, what we might call mainstream or secular fiction, and wrote some series there, both for adults and children. And now finally God has called me to move over and write Christian fiction.
What's exciting is that I get to say thank you so much for your service. Like I said, I couldn't do it. You already know what my experience with firearms are, and they're not good. I just held it. I didn't do anything else with it. I held it. I was 18, and I was at work, for goodness sake. I just held the gun. I was like, oh, it's heavy. And he was like, well, give it back, you know. So I gave it back to the security guard. He was an armed security guard at the bank. And I just held it. There's my experience with firearms. There you go. You know, I'm not a threat at all. But what are you going to say?
Well, you know, the recent – it's weird how we're all affected by recent events. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I have faced a lot of interesting stuff in my life, and I've been shot at. I've fought for my life. My wife and I were chased pre-9/11. My wife and I were chased by a lone wolf terrorist in Germany, and in a car chase and things like that. And so, usually in my nightmares, when I have nightmares, I'm very confident in my skills. And when I do have nightmares, you know, my arms are pinned to my side. I can't fight the way that I would fight when I'm awake. And these are the things that really scare me. But lately, my nightmares have involved people sneezing on me. So that's pretty much it.
Oh my gosh. You know what? That is too funny, by the way, because here you are having dealt with real stuff, and if someone coughs, you run away. You know,
there's no defense. Like, you know, when people shot at me over Iraq, the bullets can't follow me home and come after my family. But when mm-hmm. I'm working the airlines, and we're moving people out of New York, and we're repatriating Americans who are in South America or Latin America. I got stuck in Belize the other day for like 5 hours in a terminal that's designed for like 100 people, and there were like 500 people in there packed in like sardines trying to get home. I had brought a plane in from Chicago, and then it was 5 hours before I was bringing the people home to Houston. And you know, and it's a different kind of threat. This is an invisible threat that I'm terrified to bring home to my family and infect my wife and kids. So when I do have to go out, when I come home, I live in the guest room. Don't hug my kids, don't hug my wife. I stay steer clear of them. I work in my office. I go back and forth between the guest room and my office. The airline suggests, I know the word is 14 days. The airline's guidance for us when we come home is 7 to 10 days. If we're not showing any symptoms at all, then we should be good to go.
Well, that's a good rule to live by, particularly in our pandemic right now, that everyone's experiencing that heightened sense of awareness that, oh my gosh, I could have something, but it won't show up for several days. I was telling my husband that the other day. I said, you know, we can be here and then you can have it, but we won't know about it till 2 weeks from now. And that's the scary part. And I like the analogy that you use, that's invisible. You can't defend against it because it could already be on you. And that actually can be taken in a different way if you think about spiritual warfare, how even though, quote unquote, you can't see it, it's very much real. You know, do you see a lot of that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, go ahead. Please expand.
No, I was just saying, absolutely. I agree with you. Yeah, I like that analogy. You know, it's an invisible threat. And just because we can't see it doesn't mean it's not there. And it has obviously, you know, detrimental visible consequences.
I think that's a good point to bring out too, that it does have invisible, it does have consequences that may be invisible or visible too. So it's a good topic of conversation, particularly someone who has been in battle and have been with war, things of that nature. So like I said before, thank you so much for your service, because I'm not the one doing it. And it's really interesting because I can just tell you've experienced life, you know. And I know looking back on it, you kind of go like, wow, how did I make it over? Like that song, you know. You know, what was, if you can tell your past self what you know now, what would you tell your past self?
Oh, wow. I'm not sure. I think that kind of keep calm and carry on, keep pressing. and, you know, just keep focusing on God. I think it was later in my military career that I really discovered the concept of seek ye first, Matthew 6:33, which has become my motto, and it's what I teach when I'm talking to school kids and so forth. But seek ye first the kingdom of God, and the rest will be added. And that's what, you know, over the course of, you know, two careers, I've learned. I wish I had known that, you know, coming out of high school.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things we wish we had known coming out of high school, but there's something for hindsight. There is something for hindsight. You know, I can just tell this is going to be so much fun. I can just tell. I'm so excited because I want our listeners to know more about you. Then I want to tell them about the book because the book is very thrilling, you know. Before I do that, let's talk really quickly about your journey to writing. You know, when did you say, you know what, I got to start writing? And I know you wrote secular books, and now you're writing faith-based books. You know, so tell us how the journey started for you.
Oh, I've been writing since I was a child. I think I tried to write my first book when I was 4. It was a very plagiarized version. You know, I think I was writing a book about pandas playing soccer. There may have been a library book recently checked out about raccoons playing soccer. But I've always wanted to tell stories and recreate stories and so on and so forth. My first short story that went in public in any way, shape, or form, I read over the radio at the age of 12 in my hometown of Missouri, and so it was in high school. I wrote stories in poem form, and some of those were published in local newspapers, the high school newspaper. But then I went into the military at 17. And that, you know, the writing took a back seat. So it wasn't until I left the active duty service in 2007 that I started to really write in earnest again. And that was the first book that was published by, really published, and that would be Wraith.
I saw the cover of Wraith, and I thought the cover was killer, by the way. I was like, wow, this looks like a really good book. And I was looking at some of the reviews, and people were just raving about it. So, yeah. I can tell that was definitely something that's been in you for a long time. Now, my question to you, and I don't think it's a wrong or right answer, is this. Do you think writers are born or are they bred?
Oh, see, I think they're both. I think you're right about there not being a right and wrong on that. I think some people are natural writers. In fact, I've mentored a couple, and I'm always trying to help out guys when I see talent. And there are some folks that have natural talent that I only wish I had. And then there are those who are learning through study. And so for both of them, it takes some talent, you know, in order to write. Even if you are super talented, like some of the people I've met, there still requires that study. You still have to work at the craft, you know. Master sculptors aren't born master sculptors right out of the bat. They still have to, work at it. They still have to practice and learn their craft and study.
I think that's a fair answer. I actually come from the school of thought that writers are born, but they have to be honed as well. Because I think writers who are born start off as readers. And I do not believe you can be a good writer unless you are a reader, because you have to know why you love the written word first, and then you can tackle expressing that. That's just my personal viewpoint of that. I've had some people say you can breed a writer. A writer can come from a different, let's say, field or a different background and become a writer. And some people say, no, they're born a writer and just hone that skill. Some from the school of thought that they're born, but I would never, ever, ever tell someone they can't write. Never. I would never tell anyone that, you know, because I could be wrong. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm totally fine with not being wrong about that. So I really like your insight into that question. And for those of you listening in, we're talking to James R. Hannibal. He is the author of the book Chasing the White Lion, which is available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. So make sure you go ahead and pick up your copy today. We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. We'll be right back after these messages. Stay tuned.
Don't go anywhere. More with Parker and her guest on the Right Stuff Radio Show. We'll be right back.
Are you a reader looking for more compelling Christian fiction? Maybe something a little more edgy or a bit more real? Are you tired of most Christian fiction shying away from the truth and settling for a rose-tinted view of the world and its issues? Or are you an author who has a compelling story to tell, but you're afraid it doesn't jive with today's brand of Christian or secular fiction? Are you tired of Christian publishers telling you that your content is too edgy? Or maybe you've tried submitting your content under the radar to secular publishers, only to be told your themes are a bit too religious? We invite you to take a look at the Crossover Alliance. We are an online publishing company that specializes in edgy Christian speculative fiction with Christian themes and real-world content. Our company is formed from authors and readers just like you who are breaking into the mainstream and Christian markets with this compelling genre. Head over to the www.thecrossoveralliance.com for all the details on who we are, what we do, and what we accept. Right now, if you sign up for our email newsletter, you'll receive a free digital copy of our first short story anthology. Check us out today and help us spread the word about the Crossover Alliance, where light shines brighter in the darkness.
Question: if you write a book, everybody will rush out to buy it. Obvious answer: no. If you were a celebrity or if you had a huge marketing budget, then maybe you can get a lot of exposure for your book. Another solution would be to check out JoeyTweets.com. JoeyTweets.com is a promotion and marketing service with access to over 1/3 of 1 million followers on Twitter. JoeyTweets.com has 3 packages available to fit any budget. That's JoeyTweets.com. JoeyTweets.com. Get some serious exposure for your books.
How do fantasy and sci-fi help make us into better people? And how can Christians best glorify our Lord Jesus Christ as we enjoy these stories? Also, where can you find the best fantastical Christian novels? Yes, they do exist, and we know exactly where to find them.
From the creators of Lorehaven magazine and from biblical Christian storytellers around the world comes a new podcast for readers of amazing stories. We call it Fantastical Truth.
I'm E. Stephen Burnett.
And I'm Zachary Russell. Our mission is to find biblical truth in fantastic stories. We apply the wonders of these imaginary worlds to the real world our Creator has called us to serve.
Toward that chief end, we will find the best novels by Christian authors, fantasy, science fiction, and beyond. Together, we will explore these stories in light of the gospel, and we'll join these authors and other creative friends on this joyful journey to find the happiness and holiness of Jesus by exploring His gift of truthful imagination.
Please subscribe at lorehaven.com or on podcast players everywhere.
Join us in this eternal quest to seek and find fantastical truth.
We're back, and you're hanging out with the Queen of Tuesday Night, Parker J. and her guests, right here on The Right Stuff.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Right Stuff here on WPJC 104.5. Again, so very glad you are here with me today. We are talking to James R. Hannibal. He is the author of the book, Chasing the White Lion, available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. And James, once again, thank you for being with us today.
So excited to be here.
Now, I was telling our listeners how thrilled I was to be, you know, showcasing this book. So go ahead and, without giving away any spoilers, tell us about Chasing the White Lion.
Okay, so Chasing the White Lion is actually the second book in a series called the Clandestine Service Series, and that started with The Griffin Heist, which came out last September. And what we're doing is we're following a rookie CIA officer, Talia Inger. She's recently graduated from Georgetown University, where she was captain of the rowing team, and she has these aspirations to be a spy, to work in the Central Intelligence Agency, and quickly finds that life is not as glamorous as she thought. And so in The Griffin Heist, we see her dealing with sort of a backwater defense agency in the darkest hole of Eastern Europe, she's forced to work with this elite team of thieves. And so in that one, we were really working with a heist. We were working with a lot of sort of the physical side of thievery, even though we had some con games going on. When we move into Chasing the White Lion, now the team is really beginning to gel. This spies and thieves matchup is coming together. And where we were dealing with the physical cat burglar daredevil side of thievery and Griffin Heist, now in Chasing the White Lion, while we still have some of that stuff, we're focused on the con. And so our focus here in Chasing the White Lion is a group of refugee children have been taken from a compassion center, a center for the real charity Compassion International, near a refugee camp in Thailand. And that's what really pulls Talia and these thieves into the story. But they find that the crime syndicate that is involved in this kidnapping actually has ties to a traitor in the CIA. So they need to infiltrate this crime syndicate called the Jungle in order to rescue the kidnapped kids and find the traitor. And so that's what we're at with Chasing the White Lion. And to get into the crime syndicate, they'll need to execute a sort of tiered series of cons. And that was really fun to write. We had this sort of developing and layering series of cons that they need to successfully execute to get all the way to the top and hunt down the head of this agency.
What is so exciting about Chasing the White Lion is figuring out if who they think is the traitor is actually the traitor. And I found myself as I was reading it going, oh my gosh, is it really them? You know, I'm like, that'd be so horrible. This is what I'm thinking to myself. Like, that'd be horrible to have it be that person. So it's a lot of intrigue in the story, which I definitely enjoy as I read Chasing the White Lion. Again, available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. And it's actually an offering from Revell. So I want to thank Revell Publishing House for letting us connect here on the show as well. Now, when you were creating your characters, because this is part of a series, but you're creating your characters, you know, you went for a female protagonist in usually a male-dominated, as far as I know, and I could be wrong, so please correct me, a male-dominated field. Was that on purpose, or was that just the way the story took place as you were writing it?
No, it really is a male-dominated field, and so I wanted to bring some diversity to it there with a female character, and that was a struggle. It's like, should I? Am I even qualified to do that? Unfortunately, I had a great team. I have here at home my wife and my other female family and friends were very supportive. And Cindy, my wife, reads every page as soon as it comes off the printer. As soon as I finish writing it, she reads it. And she is a no-holds-barred critiquer. She is my frontline editor, and she steers me if I'm going wrong. And so with that help and with the help of the team at Revell, I think we came out with an excellent rookie female spy character in Talia Inger and all of the complexity that goes into that character. And we've received a really great response from her as well.
I like her, and I immediately was drawn to her, her story, some of her background that's revealed throughout the narrative. And I was telling James before the broadcast, too, that I was like, I didn't know this was the second book in the series, or we would have highlighted the first book in the series. But James is so effective at storytelling that you really can't tell this is the second book in this, because the book reads very well on its own as a standalone novel. So I don't want any of our listeners to think, oh, I have to read the first one before I can read the second one. And I'm sure you may give more detail, but Chasing the White Lion stands on its own 2 feet, and it's a wonderful narrative. Even the characters come together very quickly, and they start to have their little quirks and things that you totally just enmesh yourself. I kept thinking, like, this is a Soldier of Fortune story, and I love Soldier of Fortune. So I'm thinking, like, The Expendables, you know, with something else. So I can't, you know, and I like The Expendables. My grandmother, she loves action movies, so The Expendables is one of her favorites, you know. So yeah, totally digging the Chasing the White Lion. I love the cast of characters that you have. One thing you mentioned was that having that female character, and you mentioned about being qualified. A number of blogs and articles and Facebook groups and so-and-so's group and whatever often talk about write what you know. But you took the challenge of writing a female character. And I want to ask you, you know, because you had all that help there, if you didn't have that help, do you think you would have, what's the word I want to say, defaulted to a male character, and would it have been as effective if with a male character as with a female character? I hope that's not a loaded question. What do you think, Dave?
Well, and you know, they say write what you know. Well, this is my, the Griffin Heist was my 8th book. And so I had already written a spy series that was more, who I am. If you read the Nick Barron series, especially Wraith, it's a little bit autobiographical, because I was coming out of – he's a stealth test guy that winds up doing some extracurricular stuff. And, I was a stealth test guy that wound up doing some extracurricular stuff. So that's – the problem – and I think one of the reasons that this is such a middle-aged male dominated market is that the authors who are writing this are coming out of that area, and what they're doing is they're writing themselves. And so if we're going to break out of that mold, I had to take that risk. And I had already done, the Write What You Know thing. That's where I started. And then I broke out of that and wrote some children's stories, which was a challenge. And so this was a new challenge that God really laid in my lap and on my heart. And so we went after it. But like anything, if you're working in intelligence, you don't go at it by yourself. It's a team, and you surround yourself with experts in whatever topic you're chasing. And so, in how I would execute an intelligence operation, I did the same thing with this story.
It's really well done. And to our listeners out there, when you pick up your copy of Chasing the White Lion, you're going to be thrown into a very interesting world that we're teased about it a lot. We say, we hear intelligence agency, we hear all these things, but you're thrown into this world. And it makes it even cooler that our author lived this world. That makes it even cooler. So you kind of go like, I wonder how much of this is true. You know what I mean? Like, does this really happen or stuff like that? So yeah, it's very exciting. And earlier in our broadcast told us that, he did a lot of extracurricular things in his career to our country. So yeah, it's very interesting, very cool. So make sure you pick up Chasing the White Lion today. I got to tell you, there's one scene, it's in the beginning of the story, so I don't feel too bad saying this. There's one scene in there, James, where I could almost kiss you. And the reason why is because Talia is talking to the barista. And I could have sworn this barista was me. And the reason why is because she goes, you're getting the hard stuff. And even on my bio, I say I'm a recovering, off and on, recovering Mountain Dew and marshmallow addict, And she's giving her this white chocolate mocha thing. And I'm thinking to myself, that's going to go to her head. And it did. And she's like, I did get the right stuff. I just laughed my head off. I know she was, I just really flung with that character because I was like, that is me. He had no idea that was me because sugar is my... I know it's bad for me, but I just, you do what you got to do, okay? So I feel like that is really connected with that. And that was so fun about the book is all these different characters connect with the reader. And so when I read the story, my next question is always this. Is there a particular character that you love to hate, or is there a character that you hate to love?
I think a little bit of both, really, and that would be Livingston Boyd, of course, the villain, because his attitude, he's this gamer guy, he's younger, he grew up in that online environment with disengaged parents and learned his ruthlessness in the anonymous online world, and now he's created an entire crime syndicate out of that same anonymous online ruthlessness. But his cavalier gamer attitude was just a little bit fun to write. His attitude towards his parents, they think he's still a sales rep in Cardiff and things like that. Livingston Boyd was he's a very bad guy, and his line of thinking on all lines is wrong. But writing him with the humor that was involved was, the way he mistreats this Russian operative working for him who could just crush him with his thumb was fun to write.
I remember that scene in the book because he's talking to the guy. I'm like, oh my gosh, this guy can kill you within seconds. And I when I was reading about Anton, I was like, oh my gosh, this guy sounds scary. I mean, even as I was reading, the guy sounds scary. Like, he's taking on people. He's barely moving. I mean, he's one of those people who kill you and keep walking, and you would think, and he'll go, yeah, that body fell down right there. He's the one who killed you, you know. And so I was just like, okay. And I love that. And I love the various complexity of the characters. And I have to reiterate this to the listeners. You have to understand that you are immediately drawn into the narrative. You're immediately drawn into it. And James Wordsmith's skills are such that you relate to these characters instantly. And so that's what makes Chasing the White Lion such a great book to read, particularly if you like spy thrillers, espionage, military fiction, things of that nature. Oh, not military. Well, I guess you call it military fiction as well. So make sure you go ahead and pick up your copy of Chasing the White Lion today, available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. Now, James, my other question is this. These names that you pick out, okay, they're just as cool as your own name, okay? Your name is like the best of the best, okay? But these names you're picking out, do you do a name generator? I know some authors do name generators to find names for their characters, or they just come to you. I mean, how do you pick out these names? Are they based on people you know? You got to tell me, because these names, they just really roll off the tongue, which helps to connect the reader even more.
Well, I'll tell you, Talia Inger, her name actually traces back to the word Inger traces back to the word angel, and mm-hmm. so that's where that one comes from. I'm very careful about, and she's Romanian in her heritage. I'm very detailed in who my characters are and what their heritage is, what their family backgrounds are. Of course, Talia's a foster kid, but she did know her father before he was killed, and that's a little bit of the topic of the Griffin Heist, the first book, so no spoilers there. But, I do dig deep into the backgrounds of my characters, and that's what drives their name. Their name really works out to who they are. As a matter of fact, I think I've got it online. I'll have to check, and I'll put it online if it's not. But when I was developing this team, I put together a list of, Revell asked me to put together a set of character briefings, if you would, for their sales reps. And instead of just putting the generics and the descriptions, the rote descriptions and stuff like that, I put together this list of the characters, kind of who they are, and each of their birthdays relates to a real historical person who is some part of who they are. And so you can get a real good idea of who these people are by looking at that document. And I'm fairly certain it's in the Clandestine Service Series section of my website.
I love that you gave that authenticity to the characters. And I think a lot of authors need to know that you can't ever really be too detailed enough when it comes to your characters, because it does help later on. That's something I've learned as my writing career has changed over the years. Are you a pantser or a plotter?
Oh, I'm a plotter. And real quick on authenticity and Luann, we mentioned the barista in the CIA, and just like it is in the book, of exactly where it's placed in the book and everywhere else, and all that, there is a Starbucks there in the Central Intelligence Agency, and I'm not sure if a lot of people know that. Actually, there's also a Dunkin' Donuts, and I think that coffee is more popular there, so I'm told, lately. But anyway, so some of the fun parts of doing this is one, verifying when things are unclassified and are available to release to the public, and then being able to say, yeah, there is a barista with a Starbucks in the middle of the Central Intelligence Agency, and this person has special clearances to be there. And,
nice.
That's everybody. There's no way in my opinion, you can't not love Luann. Luann's awesome.
Yes, I really did connect with her. I really did. And I felt like it was me. I don't drink coffee. I'm a tea drinker through and through. But it was just when she had all the sugar and the whipped cream, and I was like, she's about to blow her head off. That's what I was thinking, and it's going to be sugar.
She's the barista who's totally judging you and telling you. She's not like judging you in silence. She's telling you right up front, this is bad for you. What are you doing?
But since you want it, FYI,
yeah, exactly.
That's kind of what she did. And I love it. And I just laughed because I felt like that was me. I totally felt like if I was going to work in intelligence, I would work in a safe place like a coffee shop surrounded by people who could protect me. That's probably the closest I'll ever get to espionage. And I'm comfortable with that, James. I'm totally comfortable with that. I'm not jumping out of airplanes and, you know, scaling mountains or whatever. I'm not scaling mountains, scaling buildings or whatever. But you were saying that you're a plotter, because I'm a pantser through and through, James. So the fact that you're a plotter, I find that interesting. And it's a well-thumbed conversation among writers about pantsing and plotting. Have you ever tried to pants, or do you just prefer plotting because that just naturally comes to you easier?
Well, yeah, I'll tell you, Chasing the White Lion was about as close to pantsing as I've come because of the rapidity with which the two books came out. Revell wanted these two books coming out in rapid sequence. And so I didn't have – usually I spend a couple of months plotting a book before I even begin writing. I didn't have that opportunity with Chasing the White Lion. Chasing the White Lion, we were talking about dreams earlier, and Chasing the White Lion was a dream. I was in Bavaria with my family researching a children's book and doing a little family vacation, and it was a particularly cold night in the little VRBO we'd gotten in this little town in Germany. And I had a very, very vivid dream that became Chasing the White Lion. And so we didn't have all the details, but we had a lot enough to get the story going. I pitched it to Revell, and they said go. And so then I was writing, and so really, Chasing the White Lion was about as pantsing as I get, where I didn't have – like normally when I plot a story and I submit it to my agent who then submits it to the publisher, I have what we, you know, we call an outline in the writing business, is really a short story version of the book. And I know folks who do 2-page outlines. I know folks who do 10-page outlines. I do 20 to 40-page outlines. So when I'm going in to write a book, I've already written a 20 to 40 page short story version of the book. And with Chasing the White Lion, I had a paragraph, and that was terrifying.
Oh, my gosh. You lost me at 20 to 40 pages outline. I can't even begin. You know, and I've said this on the show many times before, I have plotted one book, and that book has never gotten written, has never been written. And the reason why is because I know everything that's going to happen, and I can't. I can't do it. I outlined everything. I outlined each scene, each chapter. I did all the themes. You know, we'll have this theme here. This character will be here, you know, whatever. And I've never written a book. I've never written it because I feel like all the fun of discovering the book was taken out. But you know what, plotters? Rock on. Rock on. You make the world go round. That's why some people's books are written, because they plan it. Some people's books are written because they have no choice, and it's going to happen regardless. You know, I commend plotters. I just don't have that kind of structure. I like the flow. I work on the flow. I work on, you know, oh, this is a really good idea, or sometimes the story changes pace. Not that it couldn't happen with plotting. I'm pretty sure, James. I'm pretty sure, like, you may have plotted something out, and then all of a sudden as you're writing goes, oh, let's change this around, you know. So, yeah, I commend plotters. 20 to 40 pages? Really, James? Oh, my gosh, I can't. You might as well just write the book. That's how I feel. But anyway, that's just me, James. And I want to let all of you know to pick up your copy of Chasing the White Lion today on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. You're going to definitely enjoy it, just like I am. If you like spy thrillers, espionage, this is the book for you. Make sure you go ahead and pick up your copy today. When we come back, we're going to hear an excerpt from James from Chasing the White Lion, so stay tuned right there. And you still have an opportunity to call in. You can call in at 646-668-5, then press that 1. We'll be right back after these messages.
Don't go anywhere. More with Parker and her guest on the Right Stuff Radio Show. We'll be right back.
God gives humans the gift of making amazing stories to glorify Him. At SpeculativeFaith.com, our ministry is to help fans explore fantasy, science fiction, supernatural stories, and beyond from an intentional and biblical Christian perspective. We share daily articles and have extensive archives tackling hot topics like end times beliefs, the art of writing, creative excellence in the Christian subcultures, discernment, sex, magic, Harry Potter, and space aliens and the Bible. If you are a parent or anyone else with a discriminating palate, our reviewers explore fantastical novels, movies, television, and games in light of God's beauty, goodness, and truth. Want to find Christian stories? The Spec Faith Library lists every fantastical novel we can find from a Christian author. It's all part of our mission to discern, engage, and enjoy fantastical human creativity in honor of our Creator, Jesus Christ. SpeculativeFaith.com, exploring fantastical stories for God's glory.
Christian authors and writers, welcome to Readio. Readio app, developed exclusively for showcasing Christian fiction and nonfiction ebooks and audiobooks. Losing sales due to incorrect algorithm influence categorization? Books lost amongst non-Christian content? Readio allows you to reach your target audience who's eager to devour your Christian, faith-based books in a variety of subgenres. You write in a niche market. Readio solely caters to it. Become a content contributor and receive early notification of when you can start uploading your content. Go to twotigersllc.com and sign up today. Readio, the app for great Christian books. Follow us on social media at twotigersllc.
Engaging the culture's imagination through speculative fiction, The Untold Podcast produces audio fiction from a Christian worldview. Find us over at untoldpodcast.com, where we partner with authors to tell science fiction, fantasy, supernatural, and horror stories. Find links at untoldpodcast.com to subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher, and a variety of other platforms. Each month we produce high-quality audio fiction that's free to download and free to listen. Our submissions are open, and we're always looking to add another great story to over 24 hours of narrative entertainment. Find all of our audio fiction over at www.untoldpodcast.com.
We're back, and you're hanging out with the Queen of Tuesday Night, Parker J., and her guests right here on The Right Stuff.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Right Stuff here on WPJC 104.5. So very, very, very glad you are here with me today. I have been having a fantastic time talking to James R. Hannibal. He is the author of the book, Chasing the White Lion. If you like spy thrillers, if you like espionage, this is the book for you. It's available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. So make sure you love him, my brother, and go ahead and pick up your copy of Chasing the White Lion today. Now, what I'm going to do, I'm going to mute myself. I'm going to have James come on board, and he's going to read an excerpt from Chasing the White Lion. So, James, whenever you're ready, go ahead and take it over.
Okay, so let me set this up for you since we're coming in late in the story, and we're actually coming in late in the chapter. I told you before that refugee children had been kidnapped, and that's what draws our team into the story, and that we're dealing with a crowdsourced crime syndicate that they have to infiltrate with cons. So Talia Inger is deep into these cons when they get a lead on the refugee children, and somebody has picked up their trail in the jungles of Thailand. But Talia can't leave the con, so she sends Finn, who is an Australian cat bird, burglar and daredevil, and Mac, his friend, who's a Scottish burglar, and Finn drops into Thailand, and he's going to meet up with Mac later, drops into the jungle, and he meets up with Poe, who is the father of one of the refugee children, and his guide, who only speaks Thai, and Ewan, who is the director of the compassion centers in the area. He's the local director and was responsible for the compassion center where these kids were taken. So we've just Ewan and Poe and Finn are together in the jungle trying to track down these kids, and that's where we find them. So here we go. One sector of the endless green seemed lighter. Finn checked the compass clip to his belt. Ewan, look southwest. Tell me what you see. The compassion man followed his gaze. After a moment, he nodded. Both men said what they were thinking at the same time. A road. They marched 200 meters more and stepped out from the trees onto gravel and red dirt. Big truck came through here, Finn said, kneeling to draw a finger across a muddy tire track. A few days ago, maybe. I don't know. Two sets of tires on the rear axle. A dually. A sheep herder who dated my mom drove the same type. Poe looked Finn right in the eye and rattled off a few sentences in Thai. He says big trucks don't use this road, Ewan said. Too dangerous and totally unnecessary. There's a better road to the east that joins all the villages in the region. Finn gave the refugee a shrug, addressing him directly. Makes sense for our kidnappers. They'd want to steer clear of prying eyes. They kept looking, and a few paces up the road, Poe found footprints, lots of them. He'd found the place the kidnappers loaded up the children. But the tire tracks looked the same in both directions, Ewan said. Finn, can you tell which way they went? He wished he could say yes, but he'd never learned proper tracking skills. I told you, I'm not a commando. I'm a thief. We get it. Ewan seemed to let Finn's anger flow right past him. He got down on his knees in the grass beside the road and bowed his head. What are you doing? Praying. Hush. Finn turned to Poe. The refugee got down and bowed his head as well. The thief huffed, shaking his head. Great. You two gents have at it. In the meantime, I'll try to do something useful. He walked the road. 50 meters more along the northwest track, something silver flashed in the sun. Finn snatched it up and jogged back to the others in triumph. Oi, fellas, look at this. Ewan made him wait for several seconds while he finished his prayer. As he stood, he eyed Finn's trophy. It's litter. Not just any litter. Finn pulled two more wrappers from his pocket. All three bore the same green and yellow logo on a silver background. I collected these from the pens where the kids were held. One of our kidnappers is particular about his junk food. And since we know where they loaded up and where this was dropped, we can make a good bet as to which way they were headed. Instead of patting Finn on the back for his deduction, Ewan lifted his eyes skyward and said, Praise God. Poe raised his hands to match the sentiment in Thai. God, I'm the one who searched the road. I found the wrapper. Because Poe and I prayed and asked for direction. Before Finn could muster up an argument, he heard the rumble of an approaching truck. His eyes narrowed. Poe says no one uses this road, right? Ewan and the refugee both nodded. Into the trees, now. They ducked into the foliage and watched as a beat-up Toyota Hilux rolled to a stop a few feet away. The driver leaned his head out and said, Kamut, Kamut, wherever you are. I'm not good at Scottish accents, sorry. Mac, Finn led the others into the open, waving. About time you showed up. Did you have trouble tracking my signal? The mountains made it spotty at best. The Scotsman slapped his door. Borrowed this beauty from the airfield manager. What do you think? The introductions went as well as Finn might have predicted, revisiting the whole Scottish tie thing for Ewan. With that out of the way, Poe hopped into the back, and Finn and Ewan crammed themselves into the cab. As they drove off, Ewan looked skyward and offered up a thankful nod. What was that for? Finn asked. I also asked God if he could find us a ride. And that's the end of that chapter in Chasing the White Lion.
I love it. It just reads so well. You can envision everything happening. And I like the humor there. He's like, I'm the one who did the work. And he's like, going to pat me on the back. What are you thanking God for? You know, I think a lot of us do that sometimes, people who are non-believers and people who are believers for that matter. I think sometimes we all do that. Don't you think so?
Oh, absolutely. It's very difficult for us to let go and let God. And so that's what, you know, Ewan is this character who is this compassion director. He walks on faith. And Poe, this refugee who is part whose son is part of his compassion center, is also learning to walk on faith. So the two are doing it together. And this Australian who is not saved and who, you know, we're working on in the series, gets to see that from them, from the strength of their faith.
And that's a good thing to have within the story, because these are men who know how to take care of themselves. These are men that have been in all sorts of situations. Like you, even like when you mentioned just the brief blip of your life, you've been in a lot of situations, and yet there comes a time where all you have is your trust in God. Do you know, you don't have to tell us anything, but do you remember when that happened for you? Was it during some kind of altercation maybe, or was this in a still quiet moment?
I think it's more in a still quiet moment. There have been moments, you know, where I've looked back and said, only God could have got me out of that. It certainly wasn't my skill. Because he has some other purpose for me, and you know, later on I learned, you know, it was going around and speaking and writing books, and hopefully spreading his message, and I'll do that as long as he'll let me. But you know, also in the larger sense, you know, even writing books, when God moves in, and you know, when you're in the publishing world, you know, you're working really hard at it, and you it's hard to let go of that control. It's hard to let go of querying agents and all the things that you're doing, querying publishers and trying to find a publisher for a particular story, or when you think that I'm supposed to write, you know, such and such story, and then God sends someone to your doorstep and says, all this work and spinning your wheels that you've done, and I had this prepared for you, and you go write this story. And that's how I ended up in this series.
I think it's a good way of looking at it, too, and I want to thank you so much for that insight. I know for our listeners out there, I know they would have been blessed by what you just said. And, you know, I've had the pleasure of interviewing other military personnel on this show, and they always say, like, the portrayal of military people is often unrealistic. And I know you're not military per se, but you are in the armed forces. So, but they said, like, they show the guy, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, like, you know, he's taking on 50 guys coming at once, you know, and everything. He said, it's rarely like that. He says, rarely like that. And they're just regular people doing their jobs who still need the Lord no matter what's going on. And I think you portray that in Chasing the White Lion as well. When you have heard from readers, what type of response have you heard from them?
Oh, well, I've got the full gamut. I've had everything from thank you for writing these stories to death threats simply for putting a Bible verse in a secular book.
And
I know where you and your family live with details.
Goodness.
So yeah, you get the full gamut when you're out there, I guess. Most of it's positive, which is really good. And it's always encouraging to get a positive note from a reader that says, this particular thing touched me. You know, like I said, I'm a Compassion International, which we see in Chasing the White Lion. They are a real organization. They're a child advocacy group fighting child poverty around the world through holistic care, providing care through these compassion centers in the local churches. So really, you know, as far as the local communities are concerned, it's the churches. The compassion is in the background providing this. They are not seeking the glory. They're just seeking to do God's work. But people, you know, sponsor kids. You can do a monthly sponsorship through Compassion. And I'm a Compassion spokesperson. And so when I was when I wrote The Lost Property Office, which was my children's story, I wrote about this kid who is dealing with synesthesia, which is something that I have, where your senses intersect, and it can be, you know, sort of the blessing and the curse. But I was hoping that The Lost Property Office would highlight and help kids who were going through similar things to identify. Well, in God's grace, this book was translated into eight languages, one of them, actually three of them being different forms of Spanish. And so Compassion took these stories to kids in Mexico. And one of the things that hit me the most or impacted me the most was getting a letter and a picture from a kid in Mexico at a Compassion Center who had read The Lost Property Office and finally understood his own synesthesia and how his mind – and helped him understand how his mind works. And so that was – you know, being able to impact that boy's life in Mexico – was a huge thing for me.
You know, I have always been fascinated by synesthesia. And if you don't mind, what senses are linked for you? If you, again, you don't tell me if you don't want to. You say, you know, Park, I refer
no,
not
no,
to
yeah.
talk about it. It's fine. So.
So for most synesthetes are chromesthetes, which means that they have sounds have color. It's really the sort of the visual and the audible senses, auditory senses that are linked. I am depending on the study you read, I'm a 1 in 200,000 to a 1 in 1,000,000 synesthete. And for me, let's see, sounds have color and texture. I feel them. So when the lawnmower is going by outside, I feel like somebody's thumping me on the side of the face, the back of the neck, wherever the lawnmower happens to be located relative to me. I also see these brown blobs of sound when I'm at a concert. Concerts can be really trying for me because of the just the volume of sensory input. I see it. I feel it. Smells for me also have color and texture. So walking through an area where there's been roadkill for me is like walking through a sandstorm, a very bad smelling sandstorm. I can feel it against my skin, and I know how a sandstorm feels because I've been in one in Kuwait. Those are the biggest. I also see movement or hear movement. So my ability to for a sound, something, you know, something, it's weird. it's hard to describe, but something in the shape of a stick moving across my vision makes a particular whump sound. And so when I was doing drone operations, I became known as the guy who could find the guns, because as we're panning the drone cameras across landscape in whatever country we were covering, and it might be a broomstick, it might be a shovel, or it might be a rifle, but I was the guy who'd be like, okay, stop camera, zoom in here. And it's because I heard the gun passing across my vision. And we actually caught a sniper that had killed six Marines that way. Flashes of light also have sound and feeling, things like that. So anyway, most of my senses intersect.
That is so fascinating to me. And I'm just so glad to know someone, because I've often felt as if stacked, that's how I would describe, like, stacked senses are a precursor to more on the other side. And, you know, I always thought, like, you know, what would heaven be like if we can enjoy with all our senses at one time, you know? And I was thinking about it last week when we talked about the verse, love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy strength, all that might. Imagine if we could all stack it all together, just that experience of worship would be much more profound. So I've always seen that as a precursor to more. So that's why I find myself very interested in that, and I just find that absolutely fascinating. I remember, and I'm going up track here, but now that this can has been opened, I'm going to just go ahead and dig through. One guy who had the same thing, he mentioned about going to concerts. He said because, or the orchestra, I think, and he said the French horn, every time you hear the French horn, because the colors would come together as the French horn made the colors look ugly. You know, he's like, oh, gosh, like, it's not pretty because the French horn sound makes it look ugly. Another person who I read about, they can taste names, and like their names taste a certain way. And I just find that completely fascinating. I don't have that myself. So, but like you said, it's a blessing and a curse. And I'm pretty sure your intelligence level is pretty high. You know, I would, like, your IQ is probably high, I would bet. I would probably bet that it's pretty high. And so, yeah, that is so fascinating to me, James. You know, your name is cool. You're cool. I hope one day I can live in your bubble. I want to live in your bubble one day. I totally would. I just want to clean the bubble, because that is so cool. I want to thank you for being with us on the show today. Really appreciate it. Can you give us your social media outlets so people can follow you online?
Yeah, so it really, if you just Google James R. Hannibal, but one thing I want to say to your listeners is, like I said, I'm a Compassion International spokesperson. So obviously Revelle and I want you to go out and get the book, but if you want to go to compassion.com and sponsor a child, which is $38 a month, and you can pick from a lot of locations around the world to help a child and create a relationship with them by writing letters. So if you want to go to compassion.com and sponsor a child, and then send the you can upload your initial contact and receipt to my contact page at jamesrhannibal.com. I will send you a signed free copy of Chasing the White Lion plus a collectible pen. So go to compassion.com, sponsor a child, and change a child's story today, and then load your receipt up at jamesrhannibal.com, and I will send you a book.
Hey, man, definitely glad that you put that out there so we can let our listeners know, hey, if you're looking for a place to put your dollars, this is definitely one to do it. I know it doesn't take a lot either to really impact a child's life in a certain situation. So I'm glad that you are an advocate and a spokesman for Compassionate International. Thank you so much for what you're doing and what you continue to do through various outlets that you're a part of. So this show is always about encouraging the author to pick up the pen and write. In a few moments we have left, go ahead and encourage that would-be author to pick up the pen and do so.
Okay, so, you know, grab your pen, know that anybody, like we said earlier, anybody can write a story, and if you have a passion for stories, then you probably can have a passion for writing and for writing stories. So, you know, take your pen, and whether you're a plotter or a pantser, the very first key is sitting down at that desk and putting pen to paper and finger to keyboard and letting that story flow out of you.
James, thank you so much for being with us on the show today. I cannot wait to have you back, and have you back real soon.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been such a good time.
And we were talking today to James R. Hannibal. He is the author of the book Chasing the White Lion, which is available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. If you like spy thrillers and espionage, this is the book for you. One thing I was really taken away with James's interview today was so much experience that he has, you know, and he still says, thank God. And I think that's important if you're going to write from a place of experience. You have to look back at what the Lord has brought you from and what he has taken you through and how he's going to continue to bring you out. One thing James said, you know, when he was in active duty, you know, he was able to fight against those enemies. But with COVID-19 and other things in our life, we don't have a defense attack. They're invisible. Spiritual warfare, the same thing. So we have to put our trust in God. So I want to encourage our would-be authors out there and the people who aren't, just readers who enjoy reading, you know, trust the Lord with all your heart and lean not unto your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him and he shall direct thy path. Take that with you today. And for those would-be writers, I hope you learned something from James today. Pick up the pen and write stuff. Thank you for joining me for this edition of The Write Stuff. I'm the queen of Tuesday nights, Parker J, and you have a wonderful, absolutely glorious, blessed day.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of The Right Stuff. Follow Parker online at parkerjcole.com. To hear this show and other shows, visit the show archive at therightstuffradio.wordpress.com. We'll be back same time next week, 7 p.m. Eastern Time.